Aren't you going to say something? Oh, you want me to?
No. That was perfect. When you said, aren't you going to say something? That's going to be like our intro thing where it's like a jokey thing. And...
Oh, I like that.
Oh, I thought you were going to start it off.
What? No, you're supposed to start it off.
Okay. Well, hey guys, welcome to the 7th episode of Command SK.
Hey guys, what's up? Clearly we're not on our game today, but anyways.
Oh, we thought we were, but then as always in life, we were clearly very underprepared. So, yeah, but on this episode, it's going to be a good episode. We're going to be talking about a lot of interesting things. So we're going to be talking about some nice health and fitness, specifically about fasting, which a lot of people I know are very interested in. Also about how we're going to go about our summer fitness routines and our plans for that. And we know a lot of people now, the weather in Canada, at least, has gotten really nice. So we know that a lot of people are going to start hopefully actually executing on their goals now that they have an excuse to go outside. we're also going to be talking about a little bit of Apple news, as well as some advice that me and Shrek both have as graduate, undergraduate, or recently graduated undergrad student to other students, whether they're on co-op or in high school or whatever the case may be. And then lastly, we're going to talk a little smidge about what might be the biggest movie in the past 10 years, Avengers Infinity War. No spoilers, of course, because we're good people. So, yeah, I guess we'll get started with an article that Shrek wanted to share.
Yeah, so I came across this article, and mind you that the study was actually published last year, December, but I think it's still really relevant. It's a study that talks about how it found that fasting for 72 hours can regenerate the entire immune system. It's on this website called awarenessact.com, so we'll include the link. But basically what it talked about was how a group of researchers from the University of Southern California conducted a study where they asked a group of participants in their initial stages to fast for, it says here, 2 to 4 days on a regular basis over a 6-month period. And what they noticed was that the participants that did fast for 2 to 4 days on a regular basis over that 6-month period had a noticeable decrease going down in the production of the enzyme called PKA, which is, according to the article, a hormone which has been associated with increased risk of cancer and tumor growth, and pretty much that the immune system was completely regenerated, or as it says here, got a complete overhaul. So I just found this interesting because, you know, there's a lot of talks about intermittent fasting and you know, the benefits of it, the potential drawbacks of it. So, I mean, what do you think, Karin? Like, so now, according to this, you know, fasting actually regenerates our immune system.
Yeah, so this preliminary research is really astounding. It's really interesting, and it opens up a world of possibilities into looking into fasting as a legitimate tool for health, fitness, longevity, all that good stuff. But of course, as mentioned in the article itself and this the research paper, this is just the beginning, and this there needs to be a lot more scientific validation before we can actually move forward with all of this body of research, this area of this domain of knowledge regarding how fasting impacts the body and its positive and negative effects, the actual practical and pragmatic application, all of those things. So it looks promising though, which is a great start. But of course, I guess I'll go, that's a good segue. This article is a good segue leading me to start talking into the area of fasting.
Well, Karin, before we do that though, I just wanted to kind of end this part off just by talking a little bit, just because I think this is really, you know, interesting to know, is that it says here that, you know, there are potential applications to this. Obviously, it does need to be validated scientifically, you're right. But it's just interesting that some of these potential applications are, you know, include helping those receiving chemotherapy treatments, or it says here for the aging population. And the reason that these are the potential applications is that it says here that fasting, and I quote, triggered a switch to flip in the body, signaling it to begin a stem cell-based regeneration of the hematopoietic system. So, I mean, I'm just excited to think about if there was a way that they could somehow, you know, drawing on my undergraduate science stuff, but, like, that they could somehow isolate this behavior and use it to actually possibly find cures for certain, you know, diseases, or help, you know, bodies that have been through the physiological trauma of disease somehow regenerate. So I just thought it was really interesting that these are some of the potential applications as well. And it says here that it says that once when you fast, when they these participants fasted, it forced the body to use up its stores of, it says here, glucose, fat, and ketones, and also started to break down a large number of white blood cells. And basically, because a lot of white blood cells were being broken down, it signaled that they that new immune system cells should be regenerated. So I just think this is, you know, it's really interesting behavior that was exhibited in the study. So I'm really excited to see where they go with it if they do take it further.
Yeah, definitely. Not knocking at all whatever they what have they found so far in the preliminary research and the studies, and definitely hopefully they can leverage this in the future to do some amazing things. Definitely. Not going all out on the prediction train, so not really want to overstate any of the potential, you know, benefits and uses of this. But yeah, it's we'll definitely keep an eye on this. And I guess that's now a good segue to lead into talking about fasting.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so we can talk about our personal experiences with fasting, I think.
Before we do that, though, I think... No, I was saying, my bad. Before we do that, I think we should just break down different types of intermittent fasting, because here's the thing, Karin, and obviously you know this, but to people listening who may not know or, you know, haven't looked into it, there are a lot of different types of intermittent fasting, and from at least from what I know, and Karin, you can obviously expand on it, there isn't necessarily any concrete proof or evidence that shows that one method is better than the other. So let's do this. Let's start by breaking down some of the different ways that you can intermittent fast and what intermittent fasting is. So basically what it is in a nutshell is when you have periods where you eat and periods where you don't eat. So for example, one type of intermittent fasting it's called the 16-8 methods, where you fast for 16 hours a day and then you have an 8-hour eating window, for example. So and then there's also the 5-2 diet, which is where you fast for 2 days a week, where you don't necessarily eat anything, or maybe a liquid diet at most, but and then 5 days you just eat normally. So then there's also, I'm just looking at this, Karin, the eat-stop-eat, which is where you do a 24-hour fast once or twice a week. So and there are many, many more. I could go on forever, but it really just depends on your... you know, preference for it. But so what about you, Karin? I know you intermittent fast. I don't remember if you do it consistently, but which one do you use?
Yeah, so over the years, like since I started looking into getting more interested in looking into the health and fitness space and using it to and finding out how I could apply it to my own life, I took interest in fasting as an approach and used it for in a variety of different ways over the years for a variety of different reasons. And so I guess I'll start off first talking about the different fasting methods that Shrek mentioned. So you mentioned these different protocols that you have, which talk about the duration of fast and the duration of time spent in a fed state. I'll talk a little bit about that. We all technically intermittent fast, regardless of whether, probably 99% of the population does intermittent fast without realizing it or knowing it. If you sleep for more than 7 to 8 hours in a row without eating, you're fasting in that period. So most people do perform fasting regardless of whether they perform conscious fasting throughout their waking hours. When you're asleep and you're not eating for that entire time, that is fasting. And that's why, no surprise, it's called breakfast. That's why the name breakfast is there. Break fast is what it means. So it's not, doesn't necessarily mean you're eating in the morning. It means breakfast is whenever you have your first meal in the day to break the actual fast that was occurring during the time that you were sleeping. So if you have breakfast, if you eat lunch as your first meal of the day, that's also breakfast because that's the meal that you're using to break your fast. So with that in mind, now that we know all of us do intermittent fast without knowing it every single day, it's just in terms of the different timelines that we're using or the different approaches for the protocols. So the different parameters that we're going to apply to fasting to our daily lives based on our needs or wants or whatever is most useful or easy. So for example, I can, depending on the circumstances, like if, let's say I'm on a long period of where I have to be busy and go out and don't have too much time to eat, I can adopt a custom protocol where I can fast for up to 20 hours in a day, which means I have a 4-hour feeding window where I'd eat like one huge meal of my entire caloric intake for the day, which would be anywhere from 2,000 to 3,000 calories, which is a lot of food to eat in one meal. But when you haven't eaten for 20 hours, you can do it. a lot of people can do it. So just as an example in an extreme case. And then so you have more standardized approaches. So everyone, if like an average person, if they sleep for 8 hours and they don't eat an hour before and an hour after sleeping, technically you're already doing a 10-14 fast where you're not eating for 10 hours. And then you have your 14 hours of the day that you're awake, you spent eating. And then for most intermittent fasting approaches, they constrict this time window to a shorter time window. So for me, that's when my usual intermittent fasting is, I will eat, I'll adopt a protocol where I eat 2 meals a day. So that's my most common approach. And I usually do this during times of school, or busy work where I'm really busy and I have time to eat maybe breakfast or lunch or dinner. And so during that period, I'll usually have about one, depending on the meal, like anywhere from 800 to 1500 calories for one meal, have two of those in a day. And then that's my protocol. And so that's my experience with it is it's very different. The level of ease is very different for different people. And the you should base the intermittent fasting approach that you choose to do based on what's most convenient for you. Because as I'll get into in a bit, right away, the science about fasting, or at least what the effects of fasting are and the misconceptions around it. But before I go ahead, is there anything else you wanted to add to that, Shrek?
Well, I definitely want to provide kind of the other side of that, because, you know, there is that side of the experience, like, you know, what kind of like what Karan does, where he has a certain protocol, like he said, of, you know, a way of doing things or fasting rather. And there are times where he's told me, like, he's literally gone 24 hours without eating, which, hey, more power and like hats off. But I legit cannot do that. So I intermittent fast as well, but mine is more of a, which this method is officially called, there's no real official name for it, but like on this website I just looked up, it's a spontaneous meal skipping. So I kind of do it as a listen to your body sort of thing, generally speaking. So I've never really varied from that much. Initially, and you remember, Karan, I tried doing like a, you know, the 16-8 or that sort of thing, but it didn't really work for me. So I did kind of where I just listened to my body. So let's say, for example, I wake up and I'm not really that hungry. I just wait until I'm actually hungry to have breakfast. If I'm not hungry, and even in general, I don't force myself to eat if I'm not hungry. So I think that technique works better for me, just because I am not as disciplined as Karan is. So I just listen to when my body says I'm hungry, and then I just eat something. But in all this, I think it's important that we just make sure we mention that at the end of the day, if intermittent fasting isn't something you have to do to lose weight, and I know you agree with that, Karan, but it's more so something you can do if you feel like you need to take that extra step to lose that little bit of weight or a lot of weight that you feel like you need to use. But definitely it's definitely something, just for like safety purposes, we should say that you should ask your doctor before actually doing this.
Do not fast without consulting your doctor or nutrition or dietitian.
Yeah, and the other thing too is I think it's important to talk about how within intermittent fasting, whether you do it my way, Karan's way, anything in between, is intermittent fasting doesn't mean, for example, if you're doing 16-8, that 16 hours you don't eat and then 8 hours you absolutely pig out, because that, you know, eat like burgers and junk food and just constantly for the 8 hours, because that defeats the purpose of doing the fast anyways. So it's you still have to eat just normally and as healthy as possible, but it's just constricting the timelines that you eat, just so your body, kind of like we talked about in that article, has a chance to use some of the stored fat, as opposed to breaking down your vital organs or tissue or muscle tissue or anything like that. So just bear all that in mind.
Yeah. So I'll go more into the science and the misconceptions and talking about, so what people think of when they think of fasting, like how they think it'll affect them, and how they will go wrong, and what I can talk about that. So first we'll talk about, so fasting itself is just a tool, and as a tool, it has no magical properties or benefits or extra benefits or properties beyond the application of the tool itself, which means that it doesn't do anything extra that another diet approach, or actually not doing any approach at all, could also do for you. So you have to keep that in mind, and you have to understand why it works and how it works to be able to effectively use it if you want to use it, and note that you don't actually have to use it. And fasting doesn't necessarily make you lose weight, lose fat, gain or lose anything. So that is still determined by your net caloric balance over time. So always keep that in mind. Your fat gain and loss will, still be determined by your net caloric intake, your net caloric balance, your intake, your expenditure, all of those things still remain. The science behind that, that's still there. That won't go away regardless of what diet you choose to do. Doesn't matter if you choose get a ketogenic diet. Doesn't matter if you choose to be vegetarian, vegan. Doesn't matter if you choose to use fasting. But now if we've gone, if we're going in, within the domain of fasting, and you know that already, you know that it's just a tool and it matters how you use it, and that's going to affect both and how it works and its results. So let's assume that you know that it's not going to be a magic pill. It's not going to do anything, you know, for you on its own. You have to actually apply it in a systematic, proper process approach in a proper manner, and you have to follow through on all of your things that you've set for it, set for yourself to get to that goal that you want. So with that in mind, fasting, why it's effective as a fat loss tool is not because it has any special properties. Actually, it's just because it works more effectively for people by attempting to restrict the time window of feeding. It increases the likelihood that you will eat less food because you have a less amount of time to eat that food. And a lot of people can stay full for a long period of time after they've eaten a huge meal. So for example, if you were to eat 3 small meals a day versus eating 2 larger meals in a day, you might be the type of person that feels full, more full for longer after you eat a larger meal. So that might be more effective in lowering your net caloric intake for the day. So you eat less calories, and if you continue that over a consistent manner over time, then that will result in the fat loss that you're seeking, hopefully. So that's how to think about intermittent fasting and why it's effective how it works. So when you look at all of the factors that affect your calories, that affect how you can lose fat in a day, if you look at all those factors, fasting doesn't actually affect any of those factors. So that's just speaking to the science of it. So you lose fats based on your caloric intake, or so your caloric expenditure for a day is based on a number of different factors. So the first one is your basal metabolic rate. So that's the amount of calories you just burn doing nothing at rest. That's determined by your body composition, how much fat and muscle you have on you. And that if that doesn't change from day to day, the fasting doesn't affect that factor. So the next factor is your exercise activity. Now, fasting won't affect that either. That's independent of what you eat. It's how much exercise you do. So now you've taken your basal metabolic rate, you've taken your activity. And the third factor is going to be your NEAT. So that's an acronym, NEAT. And what that stands for is non-exercise activity thermogenesis. And all of that fancy schmancy word salad means is it's the amount of calories you burn doing things that are not considered exercise, but that you just do in the day, moving around your body, whether it's a combination of voluntary and involuntary things, like picking up a bag, let's say brushing your teeth, let's say moving your eyes. All of those things are take part of NEAT, and NEAT is affected by other factors in your life. If you're feeling more lethargic, more slow, due to whatever reason, then that can affect how much calories you burn just doing all of these little things in the day that add up to a lot. But if you fast, that doesn't necessarily affect it over the long term. So for example, when you fast, you might feel more lethargic when you eat. So you might, your NEAT might actually get lower in that time frame. But as a consequence, during the rest of the hours of the day, when you are on a fasted state, it might go up at a proportional rate, which means that over the course of 24 hours, over the course of a week, a month, whatever the time period is, it eventually balances out in terms of fasting not having an effect on any of those factors that influence how much fat you'll actually lose. So now that you have a picture of how it works and why it works, that's now you can go and take use fasting as an approach to lose weight, to lose fat, to further whatever goals you have. So that's kind of just wanting to give a primer on fasting. And for me, fasting is a tool that I use for two reasons. One, necessity. One, when I need to, when I'm busy and I don't have time to go out and eat or cook something. And the second is when I'm going through a phase of hunger management. So in this case, let's say I'm studying, and when I study, I get ravenous because I need to literally, psychologically at least, feel that I need to fuel my brain. So I tend to eat a lot more food in a day when I'm rigorously studying for an exam, for example. So in that case, I'll limit my food intake to 2 meals because those 2 meals will be huge meals for me. But in that sense, I restrict the time window to, let's say, 6 hours. So I'll eat one meal, and then three, 4 hours later, I'll eat another meal, and then I won't eat anything for another 20 hours. But within that time frame, I've eaten a lot of food, and I managed to stay full and then able to continue focusing on my study. So it's an effective way to lose weight, lose fat, for example, if used right, and if you understand the mechanisms behind fasting, why it works, how it works, and that it's not a special magic pill.
And in a nutshell too, I think it's important to point out that the reason that it's proved effective for Karan, it's because he figured out what works best for him, his body type, how hungry he gets, all that stuff. So it's really important to not take this all verbatim and really think about how think about how it works in the context of your body and your lifestyle and figure it out that way. Because I know a lot of people, myself included, I really used to not care at all, just be like, whatever, I just eat the way I eat, whatever. But you do have to expend some mental energy, as much as you don't want to, because trust me, I get it, to think about how these things work in the context of you, pretty much. So just as long as you ensure you do that and really think about the science behind it and how it would work for you, I think you'll be fine.
Yeah. So yeah, and also one more thing, just I don't know why it came off the top of my head, but I wanted to have a pet peeve moment about it, is so there was this psychologist back in the day that invented the term somatotypes, that invented the idea, the concept of somatotypes. So do you know what somatotypes are, Shrek?
Vaguely.
Yeah, it's the concept of being based on looking at a person's frame, classifying or categorizing them into three different body types, your endomorph, your ectomorph, your mesomorph, right? So everyone's familiar with that, but I have a pet peeve about that, because the science, quickly thereafter, the initial finding, quote unquote finding, of the psychologist on doing this classification of somatotypes, if you figure you have a lean frame, a big frame, or a middle size frame, that affects how good you are genetic wise in terms of being able to develop the body that you're going to most likely to develop, right? So like, let's say you have the skinny person is going to be lanky, the mid person is going to be jacked, and the guy with the big frame, I think it's the endomorph, that somatotype is going to be most likely to be a bulky, like muscular guy, whatever, right? So that's like the misconception. That the science was debunked as pseudoscience very quickly after. So don't, if you ever read or hear about any of that somatotype nonsense, don't feed into it. It's just something that I want to talk about. Because just one example of this, I was watching this fitness YouTuber called... his name is Phil, I believe. He basically gave a video on talking about this and speaking about his personal experience and showing two pictures side by side of the same guy. One guy had weighing 140 pounds, the same guy weighing 210 pounds. And if you were to look at that person in those two photos, you would assume that they would have different body types, but it was actually the same person that just gained a bunch of muscle and muscle mass through exercise and strength training and proper nutrition, and gain a lot of weight. And so just wanted to add that, even though it's not related to what we were talking about, fasting, just something that came up in my head that I want to talk about. Somatotypes are not real for people. It's...
Absolutely. And I think with that, though, you brought up a good point, because now I just want to make sure I guess play devil's advocate and point out the other side of it, which is just that. So Karan's absolutely right. It's you shouldn't look at your body type as your curse and say, okay, that's it. Like, this is my body type. I can't change it. If I'm skinny, I can't grow muscle. Or if I'm really big and I can't, whatever. So, but at the same time, the other side of it, and the reason I speak about this is because this is something that I used to go through, is thinking, why can't I, my body type is very, up and down, average, whatever. Why can't I change it? This, that. But that put a lot of pressure on me mentally. So I, if you're going through that, then almost look at it like, it's just my body type. It's not something that I'm necessarily doing wrong, or that I'm not doing enough, that, that it's just my body type, and it's fine the way it is. If you feel like it's putting too much pressure on you, and it gives you almost, I hate to use this word, but like body issues or like dysmorphia, is almost, don't put that pressure on yourself if you're not able to to do it. Just be happy with the way you are. Just because I've gone through it, so I just wanted to speak on that. But Karin's absolutely right. If you can, and if you're willing to put in the almost strategic nutrition and exercise programs behind it, then you can obviously change your kind of body and it not be related to your body type necessarily. But I just wanted to kind of talk about that.
Yeah, for sure. And like one other thing, I don't know why these small little nuggets keep coming up. I'll just share this for guys or girls who are looking into like figuring out like how, if you want to get jacked, you're looking at how big you can get, how muscular you can get, how all of those things. If you're thinking about, if you're one of those people who's like considering, like wants to know if it's, there's any basis or way to find out or like to estimate or just, you know, like a ballpark, even though your body type doesn't determine it, for muscle at least, there's a lot of scientific evidence pointing towards the direction of if you take measurements of your ankles and your wrists, those bone measurements actually are very well correlated to determining your maximal muscular potential. So how jacked and big you can get. So this, it's usually proportional to the size. So if you have bigger wrists and ankle measurements, that bone circumference usually directly correlates to, or very closely correlates to, a larger potential for muscle building.
In terms of how big you can get?
Yeah. So let's say if you have the same person with the same height, same weight, same starting weight, and all the same body characteristics, yeah, but one guy has 2 inches of a greater circumference in their wrists, that guy has the potential to put on, I don't know what the mathematical formula behind it is, but could be anywhere in the neighborhood of a couple of pounds or even like up to, not 10 pounds, but quite a bit of muscle mass difference.
So in terms of weight, I guess, is what you're saying.
Lean muscle mass, lean muscle tissue, which can affect a lot of different things in terms of like your potential as well as at which stage of lifting, how much muscle you have, a lot of different things. But that's just another little nugget that I wanted to add in there. Before we move forward.
Yeah, so I mean, with all that being said, now we're talking about fitness, we're talking about fasting, all that. Why don't we talk about a little bit about our personal fitness goals for the summer? So I can start us off. I mean, right now where I'm at is, as far as fitness, is that I, you know, with school and everything, I've been working out twice a week at most. And usually I work out 3 to 4 times a week. Even if it's, you know, a 30-minute workout, I do try and do what I can. But I kind of want to get back to the summer, actually, and Karin, I don't think I've told you this, but I want to step away from the weights just a little bit.
Oh my God. sorry, this podcast is now over. You guys, I'm sorry, this was the last episode.
Karin's going to kill me. I want to step away from the weights a little bit because, if you let me finish, Karin, I just recently invested in getting a suspension trainer. A TRX, and I'm excited to start using my body weight more so than weights. And not to say I'm going to stop weights completely, because as I've said, huh?
More calisthenics.
More calisthenics, but does suspension training count as calisthenics?
I believe so. Assisted equipment for calisthenics is what I think it would count as. But yeah, if you're using calisthenics, you're using your body weight, right?
Yeah. So pretty much, the reason I want to go back to using my body weight a little bit more is because I'm very comfortable now with doing intense body weight driven workouts, you know, HIIT workout, whatever, on the floor. But I want to challenge myself and you know, get my legs up off the floor, get my upper body up off the floor, because what that does is automatically and I'm not going to pretend I know the physics behind it or anything like that, but it automatically challenges your body, because you're like, let's say you're doing a plank, but instead your legs are hanging on the two straps. It's going to challenge you to really use your core a lot more, because you have to engage it to keep your body straight, because it's naturally going to want to kind of sag in the middle. So I'm excited to kind of challenge my body with that a little bit more. And obviously, because the weather is great, like initially, and I don't think you know this, Karin. Well, I think you kind of know this, but I wanted to sign up for a gym and get back to that. But then I thought, like, I never find going to the gym fun. Why not, you know, take advantage of the great weather, take advantage of the great weather, get outdoors, start riding my bike more, that sort of thing. So I'm going to take advantage of that more and just overall try and just generally lose a lot more fat and just, you know, overall build that level of, I call it natural muscle backup, natural in the sense of without really pushing it with the weights, but just naturally through your activity, building that fitness backup.
I accept your decision. I have a lot to say. I'll say good for you, Shrek, is what I'm going to start off by saying, and then I'm going to end off by destroying you. No, I'm joking. I will. Okay, so yeah, it's good. It's good. But yeah, so what Shrek is talking about with the T-Rex stuff, so what he's talking about initially with the plank is static hold movements, and then when you're bringing your legs up, you have to do active stabilization. So that involves a lot more of your different muscles around your body. But that's actually the exact same concept as doing a machine on a weight, any weight exercise. Doing a machine or something that's seated, for example, mm-hmm. versus then taking that same exercise movement and doing free barbell or dumbbell weights standing for as the most extreme or best case example that I can think of. So let's use an example. If you're doing a machine with a fixed motion, you're curling, or not curling, let's use a shoulder press or something. You're like pushing away from you, up, and it's on a fixed path, and that will engage your muscles a little bit. That'll like give you some growth stimulus. But if you want to really ramp it up, and you want to do what is basically the same thing as what Shrek's doing for the plank to his T-Rex core stabilization activity, is taking that shoulder press, get your ass off the shoulder press machine, so stop sitting down. You're going to stand up, you're going to go to a barbell station, you're going to go overhead press with a barbell, and then what happens in that case is you're going to involve a lot of active stabilization muscles because it's for this compound movement, and you're going to be working a lot of more muscles, you're going to be working including your core a lot more, and then you're going to, there's a potential for a greater, you see a greater degree of hypertrophy, build muscle in a lot of different areas, and strength as well will be much greater affected because you will be working a lot more muscles. You'll be doing an exercise that is, not sure how to say it, but harder, more difficult in a lot of ways. And so I'm not trying to convince Shrek to just do, I'm not going to try to convince him back into the weight room because he could be doing the exact same thing with the weights, except even better. Sorry.
I don't know, man. I'm going to have to beg to differ.
What I will say is, like, the gymnast, like, what you're doing is what you're trying to do. What gymnasts are jacked. That's a fact. Is gymnasts are very muscular, and they build all of their muscle using bodyweight exercises,
yeah,
and things like that. So I would say if you're planning the transition that I think you're planning, better go full gymnastic, or you keep the weights in your thing, because the plank to TRX thing is great. If you were, let's say, to incorporate a weighted version of that, which would be even more effective than the TRX one, but that would be the next step up, is you have that tricep extension. You know the tricep extension?
Yes.
You have that weight stack. Put the weight stack all the way to the max weight. Then what you're going to do is you're going to bring that rope. You bring it. You're going to sit on the floor on your knees.
Yes.
Then what you're going to do is you're going to do a weighted. It's not a weighted crunch. It's a weighted ab pull down with a ridiculous amount of weight, and you're going to be getting 10 times better ab workout, core workout, whatever you want to call it, than doing the plank, but also quite a bit better than doing the TRX version. So if you want to stick to I'm not going to say anything bad about what you're doing, because definitely it's better than doing the plank, like the TRX thing. But just as a recommendation, definitely keep the weights in there, and that's going to have the same, like, the natural muscle building. I don't really know what you meant by that.
That's just what I call it, in the sense of muscle. That's just my own way of thinking about it. Just muscle, or whatever, you know, fitness that you build up through I like to think of it as an activity more so than working. And okay, like, what I want to say, guys, is everything that Curran broke down, I'm not disputing it. And like I said, it's not that I'm giving up weights, just because they do have their benefits. I just think of it more as, and this may sound juvenile to some people, but weightlifting, you know, in the gym, and that it's just not fun to me. And part of the reason that Curran does it so well is because he actually enjoys it. I do not fully enjoy it. I use weights, you know, as a part of my workout, but I don't enjoy the idea of, you know, going to the gym and you know, pumping iron and all that. I like to, you know, do body weight exercises. I like to, you know, go to like fitness classes. Like, I've gone to Zumba, which, like, someone's probably going to laugh at me. I don't care, but it's a lot of fun. So I like to have fun. And if no matter what anybody says, I staunchly believe that if you're not having fun, working out or doing whatever it is you're doing, you're never going to lose the weight that you want to lose or gain the muscle you want to gain. You have to enjoy it. Otherwise, there's absolutely no point.
Completely agree. There's absolutely no point. But I consider myself a failure. I thought I would be able to convince Shrek of the fun of lifting weights because I have so much fun when I lift weights.
But you should be proud of yourself. You before I used to be completely anti-weight. He's at least convinced me of some of the benefits of weightlifting, and it's true. Like I use weights a lot for chest, for example, and you know there have been times in between where I kind of stopped weightlifting for a bit or because of school or timing or whatever, and I noticed that I wasn't gaining back as much fat as before. Now, whether that has to do with weightlifting exclusively, I don't know, but I choose to believe that because I started doing that, it really kind of influenced the way my body retained muscle. So there are definitely benefits to it. I just don't enjoy it as much. I'd rather go outside, ride my bike. I'd rather bodyweight exercises, jump rope, that sort of thing. I'm more of that kind of person. But again, it's to each their own, and you have to do what works best for you.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So no hate for me.
Yeah. You better not.
Yeah, I accept all lifestyles, okay? I accept all lifestyles. Even the non weightlifters, I accept them.
Even the non weightlifters. Look at this. The shade in here is so real, you guys. It's not even funny. No. So that was a little bit about our personal fitness goals, what we want to kind of do this summer. The weather's obviously getting better for people, you know, living in warmer climates and in Canada, America, whatever. So, you know, get outside, take advantage of that. It's going to be fun.
So that was a lot of fitness and health and stuff for 35 minutes.
Yo, oh my God.
Crazy. So do you want to just talk about one or two of the things?
Yeah. So why don't we go straight into then just talking about, we really wanted to touch on, because it is the summer and a lot of high school students and university, first year university students, for example, are getting their first summer off from high school and university. It would, you know, it's a great time to talk about summer jobs, looking for summer jobs, doing career research, that sort of thing. Because a lot of students, I know I really felt like in this position after my first year and starting summer, I had no idea what to do. I didn't really know when to start looking for jobs, that sort of thing. So I really think we should kind of talk about it for those people and give them a little bit of advice just based on our experience. And hopefully someone out there can relate to it and it'll help them out.
Yeah, for sure. Do you want to go straight ahead? Because I felt like I talked already a lot on fitness and my voice is starting to...
Yeah, he does talk a lot. No, Karn's very, very scientific with it, which I think, you know, if you guys have been listening to our past few episodes, Karn, when it comes to health and fitness, Karn's more of the scientific, break it down like point by point, which is great because I've learned a lot from him, but I'm more of the... You know, in a nutshell, this is what it means for those of my people who understand me. So going into a little bit about summer jobs, especially going out of first year, you know, it's technically because you guys are in first year coming off, you may or may not have known, but technically companies traditionally start looking to hire summer students or interns or what have you. I don't know if it's different for co-op, but around like, you know, earlier in the year, like February, January, something like that. So that would technically be the best time to start researching companies and looking into it. But, coming off of your first, it's not like they don't hire, in April and May, but so coming out of first year, first things first is establishing a solid resume and, cover letter. And when it comes to the cover letter, I mean, there's many different ways to write that, but I really want to speak to the resume more so for first year students, because that's what companies and places look at first and foremost, especially when you don't have that much experience. It's all about how you present it. So really think about, even if you've just volunteered at, you know, the after school program, or you were a lifeguard or whatever it is, really think about how you can write that out in your resume, what you took away from each experience and how that shapes your skills. And then in your cover letter, you would just need to talk about what you bring to the table and how it can help that role or job that you're applying to. So it really just comes down to, asking questions, talking to, for example, professors to see if, for those of you who want to do research, asking professors now whether they're looking for anybody, if you can even volunteer. Because here's the thing, you're not necessarily guaranteed a job, but you can at least volunteer, get your name out there, get more experience on your resume, and look at it that way. So it really just depends on where you want to go with it.
Yeah, that's, but, that's
But you know, Karn, what do you think when it comes to looking for work in the summer? I know you were in co-op, so maybe you want to talk a little bit more about the co-op side of it.
Yeah, for sure. So when a co-op is a slightly different animal, but there's a lot of similarities between that and whether it's, you know, summer job for high school students, whether it's summer job for university students, whether it's a post undergraduate or postgraduate job for students, whether it's, you know, a lot of the things are the same, but a lot of things or certain things are different. So the few things that are different that I can speak to about the co-op experiences, a lot of co-op programs, they have the mandatory, let's say 5 out of 6, for example, at the University of Waterloo co-ops that you need to take. And so, of course, the hardest one will always be the first one. And there are a percentage of students that don't get a co-op in their first co-op term. And so to that, I want to speak to, you know, that initial step into the workplace, in the workforce, because after that first co-op, I can guarantee you for the vast, vast majority of you, mm-hmm. it will get a lot easier. After you have that first co-op experience, getting the next one is a much smaller step. It's a much smaller scale of feat to overcome than getting your first one right out of the gate. So with that, some advice, of course, is for people to try to get as much volunteer experience and as much summer work experience, whether it be working at like a Tim Hortons or a McDonald's beforehand, that they can before they start their first co-op. But also using all of the information and tools and really paying attention in your first term and your second term, depending on when you start your co-op after you've started your studying, really take that and put that, as much of that as you can that's applicable to any area that you might potentially visit for any job, onto your resume, because you'll find that hopefully most programs will equip you with a lot of the things that are important and crucial for you to be able to gain that upper hand or advantage against other people in a lot of different cases, which I found that's true. And also something else that I wanted to say was, don't be afraid to apply to places where you think you might not make it, because there's no downside to applying to a place where there's a potential of you not to make it versus you not applying at all to a place where that you might make it. So, you know, you don't want to have regret in that sense.
Well, and this is where, sorry to interject, Karn, but I just wanted to, because this is the perfect time to point out that this is where, you know, how you write your resume and how you write your cover letter really comes into play, because when you're applying for, you know, a job or a role or whatever it is that you feel like maybe you're not qualified for necessarily, really look through the list of requirements that they're asking for. And if it's like, you know, a few things that you may be missing, but other things you have, try and speak to that in your cover letter. You know, talk about, for example, let's say they ask for someone who's good at using a particular type of software, which you don't necessarily know that software, but you know you're good at picking up new types of software and that sort of thing. I'm talking about me. That's kind of my experience with it. But so I always like to talk about how I adapt really quickly and I'm able to pick up new types of software in my letter. So it shows them that even though I don't know something, I'm willing to learn. I'm willing to put in the work. Or if it's something really specific, for example, this is kind of like down the road, but this is a really good example, project management. There are a lot of jobs where they require you to have some kind of project management knowledge, and it's a job you say really want, but you don't necessarily have that knowledge. You can show that, hey, I'm taking like an online project management course just to better my understanding. Show them that you're working towards it and that you're actually trying to improve yourself. And that a lot of times signals that you have what it takes to actually pick up whatever the role is. So don't get discouraged necessarily, but just in your resume and cover letter, talk about what you bring to the table to account for those gaps.
Yeah, that kind of said it better myself. That's great. Yeah, and I've lost track of what I was going to say, I think, a little bit, but no, I think I got it. Yeah, so speaking to the first co-op, yeah, that's where I stopped. I was just selling Transmetrics voice and his content, as I'm sure all of you listeners are every single time. So speaking to the first co-op experience, what was I talking about? I was talking about the...
Applying for jobs where you...
Yeah, so this applies to everything in life, I find. Something that's a general rule that you can apply everywhere in your life is you'd rather live or make decisions based on, you know, not based on the potential for nothing to occur out of an opportunity over regretting not taking that opportunity in the first place. So always, you know, try to think in that sense. And that applies greatly to your co-ops as well, because I know a lot of people who might not expect to get a specific co-op or even a co-op at all will end up getting one because they follow that principle, and that will apply and to much greater things potentially in your life. So, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I also want, with regards to all this, I wanted to talk about career researching a little bit and career development, as far as I already kind of talked about resume and cover letter, which, you know, both I think Karen will agree as well, like, you know, whether you have a job or not, especially coming out of high school and university or first year, is to really spend that time to work on your resume and cover letter. But this is also a good time in the summer, if you have time, to like, you know, take like an online course about something that you might want to learn about, like to know a little bit about project management, or, you know, if you're really bad at using Excel and that's something that you need a lot in your degree and the jobs afterwards, really maybe find a course on like you knowing Excel in and out and do that. So spend that time to develop your skills and your resume and things like that. But also spend that time to research the career. You know, if you have an idea of where you want to go with your career, even just generally, spend that time. And I think we talked about this a little bit in our previous episode, but spend that time researching the career. For example, and I said this last time, but if you want to be a doctor, reach out to, if you know like a doctor in your family, or like your family doctor, if they're really nice, ask them questions, you know, reach out to professionals in the field and see if some of them will meet with you for coffee or something like that, just to find out more about what they do and how they do it. So there's always something you can do to know that, to better inform yourself about where it is you want to go. And summer is the best time to do that.
Yeah. Oh, that was a good, you know, that was a good 1-2 punch of advice that we just handed out there. We knocked out, we dished out to you audience.
But with that, let's talk about something a lot less, you know, buttoned up, collared sounding. Avengers.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. Okay. So we're gonna talk a little bit about spoiler-free Avengers talk, just for a little bit, and then we'll end there. Okay. So this is gonna be very tricky territory, and we. Yeah. Okay. So,
how do we want to do this? Because we're not going to spoil it, guys. We promise. But
I'm watching it tomorrow, so I haven't seen it yet. But I do know what happens because I have some horrible friends. Joking. Shrek did not tell me anything. It was for other reasons.
I was going to say, Karin's the one who's horrible. He read the Reddit. It's like, and usually he's the one that doesn't like things spoiled. It's like, why would you read the Reddit?
Oh no, this was a case of I don't believe this Reddit, so I'm going to read it. It's probably not true, and it turned out to be true, and I hate myself.
Lies.
No, I thought when I read it, everyone on Reddit was telling that it's not true.
Yeah.
Because why would they do that? And it ended up doing that. And I'm like, okay, well, fuck. Oh, shit. Well, I can't swear, so I'm good. Fuck this shit.
Well, it's marked.
Explicit. Yeah, I keep forgetting. I'm always like, think about the children. I'm like, there are no children. just like in my future life. Oops. Oh, I shouldn't have put that in there.
Oh, God. Okay. We'll cut that out. Okay, we're not going to spoil, but we just have to talk about, the ending. Oh, my God.
Okay.
I texted... Karin, you've technically, you know the ending, but...
No, but the audience, they will hate you if they spoil it for any of them, right?
No, I'm not going to spoil it.
Oh, okay, okay.
I was just going to say it left... Yo, I texted Karin afterwards, I said, and our friend Nick, I was shook. When I say shook, I was shooketh. Like, it was... I laughed, I cried, I cried a lot through the whole movie, I cried at the end. You oh my God, they really went there with it. Like, all I'm gonna say is Thanos, man. Thanos, like, that's it. That's all I can say. I'm really not gonna spoil it, but what were your thoughts on the what you read, the ending?
So I think they did some things that they needed to do, and that they are being both loved and hated for by fans and non-fans and everyone, literally everyone in the world. But it's good. It's good to see that when we consider the context, this movie is arguably the biggest movie of all time in a lot of different areas. So in a lot of senses, this is the biggest movie of all time. So this is a significant, monumental point in history of not just movies, not just media, not just entertainment, just in general. It's huge. Because it represents so many different things. So with that said, the decisions made, knowing all of the stakes, is it's obviously ballsy, but in addition to being ballsy, it's I don't know how to say it without like.
All I want to say though is that it's ballsy. Like I really part of me wants their heads on sticks, but like the Marvel creators. But at the same time, I will say, based on the ending, I'm optimistic that it will change, because there is a part, like technically a part two of Infinity Wars that's going to come out next year. So I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic that the ending that was in this movie will not be the resolute final ending. As far as certain outcomes that happen.
Yeah. So, okay, I think that was good. That was good enough. And we're right on 50 minutes according to my timer, so that's good. Wow, this was a long episode. We didn't even get to talk about everything we were going to talk about, so.
That's okay. We'll talk about it next time. I mean,
consider that a success.
Yeah. No, but I mean, so that's that. I think we'll wrap it up here. We'll definitely see you guys in the next one. But I do also want to say that for all our Android users who are listening, we hear you. We're sorry that it's not working. We're going to come up.
Android users can't hear this because they can't.
I know, but I don't know. I just wanted to talk about it. But just in general, maybe if anybody knows somebody who wanted to listen to it by chance, just, you know, we're working on a fix. I've posted that, but we're going to come up with a fix really soon.
Yeah, for sure. And also, the weather is beautiful outside, so we're going to go on a bike ride. Fun.
Yeah, we're going biking. See you
Hashtag
guys.
Trails. Okay, see you guys.
Otherwise, let us know what you'd like to hear about next time at CommandSK on Twitter. These are the three idiots in a minivan driving away.